Hello, sir. How are you doing today?
I'm excited to be here. This is fun.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you here, like with my pastor, and I'm watching you like mentor me through your messages over the past month has really molded me. So it's like a dream come true moment for me having you sit down here with me. I'm grateful for that opportunity.
Wow, that's great. I'm really just chuffed to be on your podcast and to talk with you, have a conversation with you and your people about what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, thank you so much, sir. Just a bit of icebreaker before we like just go into the question. What's been the most fun thing you've done over like the past week or?
Well, the past week, I have spent most of my past week working with my son on renovating his bathroom. So he has, there's a little bit of a leak going into the downstairs neighbor. And so we've gutted the whole thing. And the last week has been tiling, which wasn't super fun, installing a shower, which was a little bit more fun, installing sinks and radiators. So I have really had zero fun other than working with my son Ethan and just having a great time with him, and I guess going to Taco Bell as well.
Yeah, that's amazing. Spending time with your son is really special.
Yeah, maybe don't tell my wife that I went to Taco Bell with Ethan several
Yeah.
times. Several times, edit, cut.
Yeah. Oh, that's really amazing. So, also, what are your best hobbies? What do you like doing the most?
Okay,
What do you
well,
enjoy?
hobbies. I love golfing,
Yeah.
although I'm only getting back into it. Who has time for golf? I didn't have time for golf for years and years and years. You know, kids and family and church and everything like that. But I like being outside. I like walking. I like just the fresh air. And so I like golfing. And honestly, I just like spending a lot of time with my family and doing whatever we want to do and hanging out and having fun and walking around. Glasgow's great when it's not raining.
Yeah.
And so like 5 times a year, it's fantastic. And we have a great time just
Yeah.
being around. So
Which is really good. It's
yeah.
really good. Would you prefer America to Glasgow?
Ooh, I don't know. See, America is so different from when I moved, because I moved here 22 years ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, the America that I left, and even the town that I left, the people are all gone. Nobody lives where I grew up anymore. My family is dispersed. And so I don't know. Where would I even go if I went back, to America? It's just different. I expect to be here. My kids, I mean, I'm talking to his kids, they're all adults.
Yeah.
They're either in university here or they're working here in jobs, and it's just our life now. So I don't know. I don't expect to ever leave, although I wouldn't mind a few more escapes to the sun. But
Yeah.
now that we have a church in Ghana,
Got it. Yeah,
yeah, so it does give me
good
some chance
chance.
to break away. And
Yeah.
man, when we were down in Ghana, just the we did some baptisms in the sea,
Yeah.
and it's so
Yeah,
warm and
so
it's so
amazing.
beautiful. And oh, that was just brilliant.
Yeah,
Loved
and
it.
the energy from the people, I'm sure they were excited to see you. I
Oh
was
yeah.
like, yeah.
Well, there's so much more energy and passion.
Yeah.
And I'm comparing it to Glasgow, where it's like, can we find any energy? Can we find any passion? Versus there, like everyone's exuding life and positivity. And I'm like,
Yeah,
I feel like I
positivity.
like this place. This is a this is good. For all the challenges in Ghana,
Yeah.
but there's challenges everywhere.
Yeah.
I like the general bent towards positivity
Yeah.
and happiness. So pretty
Yeah.
powerful.
I feel it's in the African gene, like irrespective of what we're facing, we tend to still be happy
Yeah.
and just so excited
I
and
love
happy.
that. I the world needs to learn this. They need to learn whatever circumstances that joy is possible, that you can be happy and we can respond to it, whatever challenges we're facing in our life, whatever negativity. Like, life is hard. It can be hard. And then how are you going to respond to that? And I think we have a lot to learn from Africa.
Yeah. Thank you so much for that. My African brothers will be happy about this.
Hey, great. Bring it. Love it.
Yeah. Just speaking about like when you moved from America down here, at what point did you get the calling of God on your life? Like, did you feel you're called to be a pastor?
Yeah, so it's a bit progressive, a bit. So I remember when I was 14 years old, I was in a church kind of in my hometown where I grew up, a small church, and I was helping teach like the fourth and fifth grade boys' Sunday school class. And so we were downstairs, big church is upstairs.
Yes, sir.
And I remember it was time to pray for some missionaries. It happened to have been Phil and Maggie Edwards, and we were trying to pray for them. And I looked down the row to make sure that these boys aren't messing around and kind of goofing off. And they were well behaved. So I put my head back down to pray, and I heard a loud voice in my head saying, "You will be a missionary someday." Now, I didn't grow up in a church where that happened or where we talked about that. It was a weird experience, and it put me into one of those life moments where I'm like, what am I going to do with that? You know, did I just make this up? What if God just spoke to me? What if he didn't? What if it's, and it kind of processed through that. And I decided I was going to base the entirety of my life on that 2 second subjective moment. And so from that moment on, I was like, well, I think God's real. And I think God still speaks. I don't know if that was it, but I'm not willing to be wrong. So yeah. I'd rather God look at me and say, well, at least Brian's trying to follow me. And, you know, he's got a good heart, even if he's completely off track. So I based my life on that. And then I went and studied the Bible. And actually, I studied to be a Bible translator.
Wow.
And I thought that I was going to live in a grass hut somewhere, either in the South Pacific, Irian Jaya, and then kind of just wherever the Bible needed to be translated. My roommate ended up going to translate the Bible in Malaysia, wow. Just inland Malaysia for a while. It's David. He's just a great guy. But I thought that was my path. And so I trained for that 7 years in biblical languages to do that. But God had a different plan for me, and he clearly gave me a heart for the church. I remember getting a job at a church when I was in Bible college, and I was like, oh, this is my wiring. And there was just something that kind of resonated. Oh, this is what I'm made to do, and I can translate, but the people and the caring for people, being a pastor is a bit of a weird thing because you are kind of, you're a person and you're dealing with people who are imperfect and all those challenges. And you're trying to care for people who maybe some of them aren't being kind to you, but also people that are in process. We're all in process.
Yeah.
And so I just found myself I really like running after God and trying to help people run after God or discover God and rethink what is really real. Is this God stuff just made up or is it real? And so I found a lot of resonance in that. And during those years, I found myself getting opportunities to start things from zero. And I realized, okay, God seems to be calling me. And it's not like the first time it was really loud, you're going to be a missionary someday.
Yeah.
The rest is like, I'm just trying to figure out what God wants me to do. Yeah. And okay, I think God's giving me these opportunities to start things. So I think he's going to want me to start something. Like he's preparing me for something. What is he preparing me for? And I'm like, okay, no, he's preparing me to be, to start a church. And then the question is where? And when I was going through that process, I was thinking South Pacific. And then I was getting some opportunities, potentially opening up in the Serengeti Plain. And I thought I was going to be, you know, living in the shadow of Kilimanjaro for the rest of my life. But that didn't happen. And I was kind of continuing to pray through that process. And God was kind of leading me around the map. And then there was an opportunity in the Netherlands. And I think when the Netherlands opportunity happened, I was like, oh, Europe. I'd never thought about Europe before, going to Europe or being a missionary in Europe. I'm like, why? Well, I could imagine the South Pacific. I could imagine Irian Jaya where they needed the Bible translated. But I'm like, Europe, they already have the Bible. Yeah. They have the Bible translated. You know, what's going on there? But when I started looking at Europe, I was like, started going through a holy grief. Sometimes grief is unholy, but sometimes it's very holy. And God was breaking my heart for what had happened in Europe and the rejection of Christianity and the rejection of church and really the complicated situation with church. And I felt like God was starting to stir in me a calling to start a church from zero somewhere. And then ultimately that became Scotland. Now you're going to ask me when that happened. I don't remember exactly at that particular moment, but it just kept coming up. And sometimes following God is like, I got a voice. Yeah. And I mean, that's rare-ish for me, but sometimes it's like, okay, well, I'm just reading the room here and I'm reading my heart and what's resonating. And I'm kind of trying to figure this out. And I remember getting on a plane. I should let you ask me more questions, but I'm
telling the story. Good, sir.
So I remember it was August before I moved here. I moved here in September. And I just remember just looking up at in the sky. It was a dark night and just stars everywhere. I was out in the middle of nowhere and I'm like, God, I'm pretty sure this is you. I mean, I've sold our stuff. I mean, I was married. I had a one-year-old and a two-year-old. My wife had never been east of Chicago in her life. We had purchased one-way plane tickets to move to Scotland. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is you. I'm like a good 90%. But, you know, if this is not you and I'm just making this up, I just ask you to be gracious to me anyways. I'm trying to follow you. And if I'm wrong, bless me anyways. And so that was part of our journey. And we moved over and it was very difficult for many years, but that's another story for another time.
That was inspiring.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, sir, for sharing that story. Yeah. But reflecting on the two decades of ministry that you've had, what would you say as being like one of the things you've been able to take out, one of the lessons you've learned that you can share on with like leaders, whether in business, like in churches or whatever kind of leader you are right now in this day and age?
Mm-hmm. I would sum it up by my new leadership philosophy for the last couple of years has been, I tell people to lead like a grandpa. Lead like a grandpa. Now that's going to take some unpacking, but I feel like that's right at the heart of what I've been journeying through. Now, when I started off leading, I mean, I'm young, I'm in my 20s and starting this church, and I found myself in the first couple of years like so frustrated about everything, and like oh, there's less people here today. Oh, this is or like the people I'm working with, which I love if you're listening, but the people I'm working with back then were just like. They didn't feel like they were carrying their weight. And like, I was doing all the things and I was like trying to drag them forward. And it just felt like I'm wrestling with like my team and wrestling with trying to start a church in the city. And it was difficult. And a few years into it, my sister came and she actually moved here for about 2 years. Her husband had this job where he could work anywhere in the world. And she lived here for 2 years and she was just kind of talking to me one day and she's like, Brian, you don't laugh anymore. And I'm like, oh, ouch. I'm like, well, I'm not on holiday. Why would I be laughing? You know, and she's like, you don't laugh anymore. You've lost your joy. You've lost your happiness. And that was like one of those really important moments for me, just thinking about that was probably being here for 5 years and kind of trying hard, working hard, trying to bring something together. It was kind of working. It had forward and backward moments. But so much about leadership isn't about what you're producing, but it's about what you're becoming. And I was like, I was becoming somebody who was always frustrated and not somebody who was joyful. And the church was the church. It was growing. It was working, but I wasn't working. And so I was... Yeah, again, frustrated by the setbacks. I mean, some of them were quite major, and the big things and the little things. So I needed to be reminded, okay, Brian, you need to calm it down. And from that point on, for the next year or two, I went on a pursuit. I'm like, I need to figure out this joy thing, like a quest of joy. How can I, as a person, as a leader, have joy instead of being upset at everything? And at first, I didn't even know where to start. Now, I'm a Christian. I've got a Bible, and it tells me over and over again, you know, be joyful, yeah. and joy of the Lord, your strength, and all these things. And I'm like, okay, but how do I, who feel so frustrated about all these things that aren't right and that aren't working and backwards movements, and I hate it when things go backwards, but how can I have joy, whatever's going on? It took me a couple years, but I set out on that path to pursue joy. And then a couple years later, I was so anxious. Now, I'm not talking about my panic attack issues that I've battled through, and I really feel very excited about, which I'd love to talk about, but general anxiety about like life and pressures and stresses and stuff. And then God took me on a journey to figure out peace. How can I be more peaceful? And again, the Bible says a lot about peace, but for me, it was like a journey. It was like, how am I going to be a more peaceful person? So you go, and then later on, it was, how am I going to love the people in my life better? Like, so I've kind of worked through these like journeys, which in the Bible, these are like fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace. Actually, they're the first three that are mentioned in the fruit of the Spirit. I guess I kind of worked them in a wrong order, but it was just kind of where I'm at. And how that helped me as a leader was like, again, I'm not talking about the producing the results or the success or lack of success in the church. I'm talking about as a leader, who am I becoming? And am I becoming a better person, or am I becoming a monster who's successful? And I think a lot of people just are so focused, at least in the early years, of what they're working on. And they're not as attentive to like who they're becoming. So back to the lead like a grandpa.
Yes, sir.
So what that means to me is, as a younger leader, I felt like my path was reactionary, like a child. Like oh man, less people were here today. I'm gonna throw a tantrum. I'm not throwing a tantrum, but you know, like reactive, highly reactive. And then in the middle years of leadership, I was feeling just tired all the time. And I was kind of thinking, like, parents, like, they just don't really have the capacity sometimes to like just deal with the real things that are going on. And so they let things slide and they're just trying to get through and day by day. Whereas a grandparent has a much bigger perspective, and a crisis happens and like, you know what? Crises happen. They happen. Big deal. What if it lasts 2 years? When you're younger, like 2 year crisis, that is no, I can't even, I could never make it. I will never live through 2 years of a crisis. No. Like, just calm it down. It's life flows. There's good seasons, there's challenging seasons, and kind of zoom back and keep calm and just take the next right step. Just do the right thing now, whether things are going well or not, and just have that more big picture perspective. And I try to encourage leaders to really think about, A, are they a child? Are they reacting like a child in their crises? B, are they just so tired that they can't even think and they're just letting things go? To try and get to that grandfather perspective, and honestly, to pursue things peace, not like, well, just peace and joy, not hedonism, not just like go, but like, can you have joy in your challenges and in your moment? And then loving the people in your life, which is a good path for leaders.
Yeah. I just want to ask a question relating to the things you said. So like, being a Gen Z myself and living in this generation where it's like so much noise, how can you pick up the signals of doing the right things, the signals of following the right paths, not being like convinced or swayed by pressure? How can you actually find yourself in just a crazy world that we are living in right now?
Yeah, to that I say, you get the right things right. And you get the right things right every day. And the right thing, but what I mean by getting the right things right in this context, in this situation, is so often people who aren't prepared, they come to a moment of decision and they have to make a decision. I wish they were prepared for that moment. Maybe they don't know exactly what the decision is going to be, but I try and live my life prepared. And so what that means for me is, I follow Jesus, and I am trying to follow God, and my mindset is to try and do what God wants me to do, whether I'm doing it well or not doing it well, or maybe I'm not hearing rightly, but I want to follow God. And so I have that compass, I have that anchor, like that's my north. I'm trying to follow God. And so then, what practices in my life are preparing me for moments of decision? So there's two things that help. One, to have a matrix for decision making. And what I mean by that is, some people would say a philosophy. I have a philosophy for, well, in my job, leading the church. How, when decisions happen, I don't have to start from zero in making a decision. I have a matrix. Okay, this is what I'm trying to be about. This is what I'm trying to do. And so I find making decisions rather easy, because I have a philosophy that's this is how I want to generally be and where I want this church to be going, or in my life where I want to be going. If you don't have a philosophy, a big picture. This is where I'm going in life. This is what I want to, this is the kind of person I want to be. This is what I'm trying to accomplish. If you don't have that, then you lose some anchors on how to make decisions. I mean, you can always be inconsistent, but I would value consistency in that moment. So not only is having that, but also like getting the right things right. So I take time every morning, 1 hour. And during that time, I call it Jesus time, but I am just recentering, refocusing. For me, as a pastor, as a follower of Jesus, I'm reading the Bible, I'm praying, I'm going through my day, which I have my day journal planner, I don't know what it's called, and I go through every meeting and I just kind of write them all down by hand. I take them off my digital calendar and I put them on paper calendar, and I'm thinking through each one and what do I need to know and be thinking about for each thing. But I'm preparing for the day. I also spend time preparing for the next season and preparing for life. And my daughter makes fun of me. One time I was speaking and I said prepare as opposed to prepare. But like this idea, but that's kind of what I do. I'm praying through my life ahead. Again, I don't know what decisions I'm going to have to make later on today. I don't know what decisions are going to, I have decisions that I have to make that I have no answers to yet. You know, I can't say them publicly right now, but there are certain things that I've got coming up that are so huge. And the decision that I'm going to make about this, or the decision I'm going to make about that, are have so much ramifications for so many people. And today, as I sit here recording this, I have zero answers for it. But what am I doing? I am praying about it. And I'm like, God, the time's going to come where I have to make a decision. And I don't have any answers. I don't even have any possible answers yet. But like I'm looking for your guidance. I'm looking for your direction. And that's part of the joy of being a Christian, is having a sense like, I am not in this alone. I don't have to walk this alone. I have help, and God's real, and He clearly is guiding and speaking, sometimes, as I said before, directly, but most of the time it's just helping things come into place and come together. So yeah. So preparing for those kind of things. But when it comes to discernment and making decisions, if you don't have the big picture of what you're trying to do and live consistently with that, if you don't know what you're doing there, then you're just going to be chaotic and reactionary. And that's not how best to live, reacting to every moment, reacting to every opportunity. And so, yeah, it's also a way to get into a lot of trouble and get off track. So that's my thoughts on that.
Yeah. I just have another question relating to a friend I was speaking to yesterday night. So we're talking and she wasn't happy. Then I was like, okay, what are the things that you find happiness and joy in? What do you want to do for yourself? Then I realized that a lot of people just live their day not knowing what they want to do, who they want to become, and what are the little things they find joy in. So they just prefer doing something else, allowing situation, society, people to just define them. So I'm just like, couldn't really answer her. She was like, it's, you know, what makes me happy? I'm like, I know what makes me happy, but I can't tell you what makes you happy. So I was telling her that me, I derive happiness from ensuring people, like making impacts in people's lives, being able to impact people and touch lives back home or here. Just speaking to you right now makes me happy, but that's what makes me happy. But I can't say what makes you happy. But how can people find what makes them happy, like true happiness, even if they are non-Christians? And how can we just put this to them to just know that, oh, yes, you can do this to find this?
The main challenge with people, young people, when it comes to the pursuit of happiness, is they don't really know what makes them happy. Instead, they're pursuing the things that they think will make them happy.
Yeah.
And when they pursue that path, or the thing that I think this will make me happy for the next couple hours,
yeah,
but it's not going to make me happy for the next couple of days. And you know, I see this in all kinds of people where, if somebody's really rich and they can do anything they want, they have the hardest time, restraining, like, short-term happiness and damaging their long-term happiness. like just I can do this right now, so I can do, I'm going to do it right now. But big picture is not who they want to be, and they're hurting their big picture. But everybody does this if they don't know who they want to be. And again, it comes back to like, what kind of human do you want to be?
Yeah.
Do you want to be a self-centered, self-focused, self-absorbed, selfish person? Or do you want to be somebody whose life is about something much more significant than just how you feel right now?
Yeah.
And the true path to happiness isn't about the pursuit of what's going to make me happy this second. It's going to be about like finding that resonance with who am I? Now, I'm a pastor, so I would be like, who has God made me to be? And I believe that everybody has been made for a purpose and for a reason, whether they believe in God or not. They exist for a purpose and reason. And when you're more dialed into who you are and who God's made you to be, or if you don't want to talk that way, just who you happen to be, when you figure that out, then you can start making decisions in connection with that. And then how do you figure that out? Well, some of it's just as simple as like, oh man, I like helping people, or I like supporting people from a distance, or like what are your general wiring, your personality and stuff. Like why Scotland, part of it was like, just what is resonating with me? And like, what is it that is resonating with you more deeply than just, I just need to, like, who wants to live their life being driven and made miserable by FOMO, the fear of missing out? Like, nobody wants to, like, that's such a miserable thing. Just like, I just need to be where all the people are. I need to be, you know, it's like a big picture. What are you about? And sticking with that, like pursuing that. That would be my 2 cents on that.
Yeah. So would you say a lot of times we find ourselves true service to humanity and to the world?
Yeah. I mean, getting past yourself. I completely reject that the purpose of life is to live for yourself. And I think that's ultimately the most miserable way to be. And it makes miserable people around you. If everybody was living like that, this would be a miserable, miserable place. Yeah. You want to think like, I'm thinking, you know, even just like in a normal level, I want to help people. People are miserable. They're needlessly insecure or angry or just like, they have all these like strong negative experiences in their lives, like traumatic experiences. And man, I want to help people. And so that's one of the driving things in my life. And I know maybe not everybody's wired to help people, but I think everybody can make things better in their own ways. Yeah.
Thank you, sir, for that. I'm talking about service, being a Christian, Jesus, being in the month of Easter itself. So beyond religious traditions, what core message would you say Easter has offered to humanity as a whole? How can the themes of sacrifice and resurrection inspire individuals?
Okay, so Easter, just the short version of what Easter is, it's a story of, can God be trusted at the end of the day? I mean, that's a very, so Jesus, a real person, historical fact, like just a historical fact, a real person. He lives and he makes these claims in life, and he claims to be God. They want to kill him for that one. They don't like him for that one. He claims that he is able to forgive sins. He claims that. He makes claims about that he is the only way to heaven. Now, these claims were irritating people. Every one of these claims were, I mean, making religious people so upset. And really, like, how can you claim to be the one to forgive sins? How can you claim to be the only way to God? I mean, people even today would be upset about that. So he's making these big claims. And then he's telling people, look, this is what's going to happen. You're going to kill me, and then I'm going to rise from the dead in 3 days. And that's how you can know, like, God's going to raise me from the dead. And that's how you can know that my claims are true. And so Easter's story, you know, Good Friday, Jesus is crucified on a cross. That's a historical fact. Like, that's everybody, like the Romans, the Jewish, like everybody has that down. And then on the third day, God raising Jesus from the dead. And it's also, if you're a historian, you would have to rate that as a secular historian as one of the most historically certain events in the history of the world, because how we make decisions based on what happened in history is through a grid of criteria, and Jesus' resurrection ticks them all, such as the world is changed by this, the testimony of those who've gone out, eyewitness claims, people who are enemies of him. Okay, so anyways, so we have Easter, right? So we're not talking about Easter right now. I'm a big fan because it's coming up. But like the themes of sacrifices, like what is it that everybody has to wrestle with the fact of, is God real?
Yeah.
Like that is a core thing that every human being has to, even if you're like, I don't want to think about it, you're making a choice about it. And you're making a choice to not think about it, kind of reject it, at least for now. But like Easter puts on the table, like the claim that God is real and Jesus is the Son of God. And so that's something significant, because if God is real, then that ought to shape how we treat people, how we act, what we do. But furthermore, about your question, like what is it that self-sacrifice and understanding? I mean, part of Jesus was, he was a real person, but also he was living as an example, and as like this is God's ideal way. And he didn't just call people to believe in him; he called people to come and die, to follow him, to take up their cross daily, and to follow him. And so Jesus, like, saying, "Okay, I love people. Okay, tick. That's a good thing. Yeah. And I love people so much that I am willing to die so that they can be saved, that they can be helped." And now I'm not Jesus, so like if I was to die, it's not gonna bring forgiveness of sins for anybody. But like there's that model of being willing to lay down my priorities, my preferences, in love for other people, and just getting beyond myself, and even at great cost. I think that everybody kind of has a sense of like, okay, I will pay this high of cost to help people. Maybe just a few pounds, maybe just a couple hours. Everybody maybe has a little, but Jesus is like, no. When it comes to people are a big deal to God. And let's help people well. I know I keep throwing in the God card. I'm a pastor. It's, you know, I can't, it's so hard to get out of this, but because I mean, I am just so all in on this, but just like, going back to helping people, serving people, but also at cost. Like, do you love people like more than just being self-obsessed? And if you do, how is it that it shows in your life? Jesus doesn't just say that he loves people. He shows people by his death and then resurrection. But we can show people we love them by just the way that we care. And we're just like, I'm not going to live selfishly. I'm going to live to help people. And things like that. So that was a very challenging. You want to ask me about Easter? I mean, I'm just like, sorry, bro. You can add in take my voice, and then you can run it through some AI and get the answers that you want.
You gave a perfect answer. So. Also, just picking from where you start, what would you say are the many stereotypes that prevalent stereotypes, like why people hesitate spirituality due to prevalent stereotypes? How can we challenge these misconceptions and present faith as a personal journey?
That is a good question. When it comes to stereotypes and you know, you're talking like different cultures, it's something that has struck me a lot. I was raised in Seattle, Washington, and that's as far away from the Southern Bible Belt in America as possible. Very, very secular. Then I've lived here for 22 years and in Glasgow, which is also very secular and kind of around a very similar type of Western thinking person. Whereas now we have a church in Africa. And yeah. And that has just been such a lifeline. I'm writing a book. No, I've written a book. It's coming out, I don't know, in a few weeks or something. I don't know. I don't have exact day on that one, but it's coming out soon. And it's about spiritual realities our real realities and helping people break free from the misery in their lives. And I think that there's a lot of plans out there for like how to break free from misery. And you know, like, hey, I'll do this meditation or I'll do this thing or whatever. But this is a very much a Jesus way of breaking free spiritually. Now, I write this in a very Western, very, very Western mindset, but I go down to Africa and I'm talking to Richard down there, and Richard's the pastor down there is like, yeah, Brian, like this is like the basics, you know, like it's not our, we're here.
Yeah.
Your book is like the most worthless book to ever get. Great. I praise the Lord. It's not, but you know, like, I think that when it comes to our own journeys, we all have our own starting points, but we are also all running toward, like, as a Christian, we're all running towards the same thing. And what I like about, I wasn't raised in Glasgow. You weren't raised in Glasgow. I like it how the mixing up of people is really important to the world. It's really important to Christianity. It's really important to getting different voices but if people aren't moving around and you're not hearing new perspectives and new thoughts, you're going to see cultures lock in. And I think we've seen that in a lot of Scotland, especially up north in the Highlands and Islands, for many generations of just one thought, one perspective, one voice. And you know, here in an urban area with the university area, like there's more voices coming in, but yeah. So you got to understand where's your starting point and then be really honest with yourself. You have to be honest with yourself because everybody thinks that the first thing that they've heard or what they've raised or what they feel because of their upbringing is the true thing. But man, you got to be listening to people from different backgrounds. You got to be listening to people with different perspectives and be willing to grow. Like if you know everything, if you've got it all figured out by the time you're 30 or 40 or 50, you're an idiot. You don't have it all figured out. And instead, you're just closed-minded. The second you think you've got it figured out or you understand, you're closed-minded, and you're in danger of just becoming a jerk. Instead, I mean, I, those are strong words, but I believe that strongly.
Yeah.
And instead, what we need to be doing is lifelong learning, lifelong listening. In my case, to the Bible and to people and in different cultures who have learned things about life, of leadership. In my case, Jesus, spirituality, but in all the things. So I don't know if that was,
yeah, that was good.
Abrasive, too abrasive, but that's my that thoughts on that. I worry because the hardest thing that I see in our culture is closed-mindedness.
Yeah.
And everybody just so convinced that they're right.
Yeah.
And so convinced that their perspective and view of things is right. It's gross. It just oozes off people. You want to talk about God? Not openness about you know, different cultures. Anyways, I'm talking too much, but that's my thought on that.
Yeah, that's really good. I remember the first time I walked into Rio. I think it was last year in April, just around this time, and it felt like I've been someone they've been looking for years, because the love, just walking through the door, the hospitality team, and people just walking up to me and asking, oh, what's your name? What do you do? Where are you from? Like, so excited to meet me. And they've never met me all their life. So, like, and I've not just seen that play out for me. I've seen that play out for so many people. And so many people have said the same thing. So have you been able to, like, build this community? I've been home. I've not been home for about a year plus. And I've not missed home because I know I go to church like 3 times a week, get to go to YA, get to go to Sunday service, BRT. So there are like people around. So it makes me feel like, oh, my dad and mom, I'm okay with FaceTiming you. Mm-hmm. Because it's like I'm in a newfound family here. I haven't been able to build that culture into the church itself. And everyone is just so amazing and so sweet.
Yeah, I'm glad you feel that way. Yeah. It takes a lot of intentionality because that's nobody's starting point. But the church is designed, at least my read of the Bible, to be family.
Yeah.
And yet a healthy family. I think a lot of people grow up in very unhealthy families where they don't walk home and feel, they don't walk in the door and feel loved and as they ought to, or appreciated as they ought to, or accepted just because they walked in the door. I'm just, I don't mean to be pushing on anybody's buttons, yeah. But I think the sad reality is that, and the church is supposed to be a healthy family, teaching people about healthy family. Now, sadly, that's often not the case. Okay. So we've been doing this for a couple of decades. We've had to be really intentional about teaching people how to receive people, how to welcome people. I also teach parents and people who are married, like how to be kind to people when they're walking in the door and how to receive people well. But it's like, I'm glad that's your experience, because I'm telling you, like, we get a wide variety of, we have different churches that we keep starting.
Yeah.
And every time it's like, okay, we're supposed to be loving people.
Yeah.
And you don't have to know people to start there. Some people, their starting point when it comes to people that they don't know is guarded because of maybe past wounds and for understandable reasons, or cynical or critical. But we're trying to teach people, no, let's start with, I'm glad you're here.
Yeah.
And then if it turns out we're not glad that they're here, you know, we go from there, just like with all things, but we'll take the next step. But like, starting with, I'm glad you're here. And that's important. That's not just important for church. I mean, that's just good for life. Like, just what's your starting posture with people? And okay, I read this book a long time ago. I don't even remember the name of the book. And it was a fictional book. And it was about this guy who always called people that he met friend. And I kind of picked this up. And I read this like when I was in high school or something. Like, I was probably like 14. And somebody in the book challenged him, why are you calling me friend? I don't even know you. And I can't quote the exact line, but the impact of it has hung with me to this day. That he's like, I choose to start believing good about this person that I've never known, and until they prove otherwise. Yeah. And to this day, I mean, you see me stand up in front of the church and be like, hey friends, glad you're here.
Yeah.
And like, I don't know everybody. But that's just, I think that hopeful starting place. Because yes, there's going to be people who disappoint you and hurt you and let you down, but let's not start there.
Yeah.
Let's start with every new person, a new chance.
Yeah.
And you know, if it turns out disappointing, it does, but. Yeah.
I think like when you mentioned about the intentionality, it's like so true. When I went for holiday in London, so I came back, so I was just walking in. Then I met Kelly at the door. I was expecting her to forget my name. Then she was like, it's new. Where have you been? Then I'm like, how did you pronounce it well? How did you remember? She was like, yeah, I remember you. I'm like, wow. That's like, it touched me. I'm like, oh, that's really amazing. For you to know that, oh, yes, like you're part of the community. So you're just not a number that fills the seats. You're actually part of a community and people know you're there and you exist, which is really good.
Yeah, it's really important, especially like moving across the world. That's a big move.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know how many people you knew when you got on a plane. Yeah, I mean, that's big. That's big stuff. And I'm really glad you found a family. And praise the Lord, Kelly remembered your name. Yeah. Shout out to Kelly, my wife.
Yeah, thank you so much. Lastly, I would just want to talk about fear. A lot of people have anxiety. A lot of people face fear. How can people deal with uncertainties? How can you handle it? How can you move out from being waking up fearful and having fear in your heart? You've said it so many times on the pulpit, like where you talk about fear and you give practical tips and you also encouraged us to like declare words about fear, go. And that really helped me in that service. But just people listening now that didn't attend that service, what would you say to them?
Okay, so I am... in a fierce war against fear, anxiety, you know, like those feel, I hate them. I do not want to be anxious or afraid or nervous. Did I say insecurity? Is another one of the things that I'm at war with. But like when I have such compassion, because I see people who are so anxious and are so worried about all these things and are it's like they're miserable. I think that's a key word. They're miserable in their constant anxiety and worry. Now, I want to separate the panic attack issues that I have work to overcome. And I have overcome, and I just feel so excited about that. But the general anxiety things. So there's some things that stress me out, right? Or that cause general anxiety in week to week. Just I preach. I mean, it's one of the things that I do. And I mean, it takes a lot of work. And the hardest 2 days for me are Thursday, the day that I'm studying and writing. And on those days, like, I'm sure everybody has their own boxes for this kind of a day.
Yeah.
Where you're writing and you're feeling really insecure about it. Or you're like, oh, this is no good. Or what I'm doing isn't, it's and feeling really negative about it. Or like, it's not going to go any good. And then I'm like, oh, great. I got to stand up in front of people on Sunday. And this is just, it's just not good. It's not in a good place. And then on Sundays, when I actually get up and to teach, I have made a huge amount of progress in my life from a massive fear of being up in front of people to doing what I do now. And so I have a lot of experience when it comes to anxiety and overcoming anxiety. And what I tell Christians is, and I'll just listen and hear whatever your story is, but I tell people, okay, when I get up in the morning, especially on those mornings where I'm prone to it, I go and I sit on the sofa. I told you about my Jesus time. And I go to, and I set myself, but before I even do my Jesus time, I am like, anxiety. Okay, this morning. So this is weird that I'm saying this, but I am in the process of fasting. I've been fasting for a couple of days. I'll be doing 7 days, no food, only water. Now, that tends to be something that terrifies people. As people are like, I could never do that. And they're so afraid and anxious. Well, it's not that terrifying. Okay. It's fine. It is what it is. But fear is one of those anxieties or one of those things like, oh, I'll be hungry or I'll be miserable. So what I did this morning is I said, fear, get out of my life in the name of Jesus. Fear, get out. Like, I want nothing to do with fear and anxiety today. I will not give in to anxiety today. Anxiety, get out of my life. And also, I just talked to my body. I'm like, body, I forbid you from lying to me today. You're not allowed to lie. I am not starving. I can go, I have so much extra calories on my body. I can go, I can go days and I can go 30 days with just fine. So like, don't lie to me. And so I just speak to myself, like, you know, don't lie to myself. If I'm feeling anxious, I'll put my hand on my chest and I will just speak to my heart. I'll just be like, be calm. I'll just say that, be calm. And I would say in Jesus' name, I'd be like, be calm in the name of Jesus. Just Ryan, be calm. And I just address these emotions, anxiety, let's say. And I just say, no, I'm not gonna do that. And I say, anxiety, get out of my life. Heart, be calm. And, you know, when it comes to heart racing or whatever, I'm like, no, just calm down. Just calm down. Take a breath. Now, I prepare. I would also say I prepare, but I'm doing this in the morning. And the reason why that's so significant is because when I'm in the middle of the day, I'm losing touch with how I'm doing. And I'm in the wash of the anxiety. And I feel carried away by it. And I don't even realize what's going on. I don't realize what I'm living through. And I think that's the same with most people. They just live day to day anxious. But I decide to start at the beginning and in the morning. I'm like, I don't want to be anxious. And so every morning, anxiety, insecurity, fear, worry, doubt, get out. I want nothing to do with you. Get out in Jesus' name. And heart, be calm. And the other thing, though, I do the opposite as well. So I do that. But then I say, be joyful. Be thankful. And gratitude, thankfulness helps on the path to joy, but that's another topic right now. But just okay, be joyful today. Don't worry. Like, just be at peace. And for me, there's a verse that I'm always quoting myself: "Be at peace. The Lord has been good to you." And you know, whatever upheaval I might experience or whatever negative thing I might experience, just trying to keep coming to that grandparent perspective. Lord's been good to me. Here I am. Be at peace. The Lord's been good to me. So that those kinds of things I do all the time, like daily, rebuking it and commanding myself peace and joy, and hugely life-changing for me and and for other people. So, yeah.
Thank you for doing this today. Do you have any extra words?
Oh man, no pressure on the extra words. I guess my extra words are, like, as you're hearing these things, I've talked about a lot of different topics and some significant topics, like some deep stuff. If you like are hearing some of this stuff and you're like, I need to respond, I need to do something about the lack of, say, joy in my life, or the high levels of anxiety in my life, or like, I need to figure out this God thing in my life, reach out to the podcast here. And we would love to help you. We would love to help you get from where you are to here. Both of our hearts are to help people. And we want you to not be stuck in misery or just feeling lost in life. So again, reach out.
Yeah. And if you can reach out to us, please come to Reop. It's at Patik.
I love it. My favorite church.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Seth, for doing this. I'm really grateful for the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.